Prepare to broadcast worldwide.
You've discovered TalkZone.com.
TalkZone.com.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
End over end kick to Weems. 3 yards deep. He'll bring it out. 10. Eric trying to get to the far side. 15. 20. Weems trying to stretch it out. 25. Keeps his feet. 30. Weems 35. Eric Weems 40. 50. Weems 40. 30. 20. 15. 10. 5. Diving touchdown Atlanta.
Wow.
103 yards. Eric Weems just changed the game.
Snap to Rodgers. They pick up the blitz.
Oh, blitz covered.
Got a man wide open. Driver across the 30. Battle driver spinning. 25. Breaks the tackle. 15. Puts it back to the 10 to the 5. To the pylon. Touchdown. The old man still got it. Battle driver. 61 yards.
Hi, this is Hub Arkish. Wayne Larrabee's on assignment this week, but Eric Edholm's alongside, along with the entire Pro Football Weekly editorial staff. And this week, we've got previews on all the big games, including Chiefs, Chargers, Patriots, Bears, Jets, Dolphins, and the Saints and the Rams.
We'll break down the mess in Denver following the firing of their head coach, the surprising Jaguars, what would the Panthers do with the number one pick, and why is Jim Schwartz smiling in Detroit?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. I am Hub Arkish, the publisher and editor at Pro Football Weekly. Wayne Larrabee, who sits in our host chair every week, is on assignment this week, but Wayne will be back with us next week. Sitting in for Wayne is our senior editor, Eric Edholm. And in this segment, we always begin with the way we hear it, all the news, scoops, and rumors from around the NFL with the Pro Football Weekly editorial staff. And we will start today with associate editor Alex Maester, who covers the Denver Broncos for us. And Alex, big news out of Denver this week. Everybody knows by now Josh McDaniel's gone. I think everybody knows why. Bottom line, though, is what's going to happen next with this Broncos organization? What we're hearing is that Pat Bowlen, the owner, is going to deal more with the front office before he gets to the coaching staff?
That's what I'm hearing. I think they want to bring in a strong front office guy before they hire a new coach. Josh McDaniels and Mike Shanahan before him had a lot of power in the personnel, and it hadn't worked out for the past couple of years. So they want to bring in a strong, independent voice. And I'm hearing that that could be John Elway, who's been working with the team as a consultant lately, and they want to bring him on in a bigger role.
You know, it's interesting, Alex. You've got Brian Zanders, who's been there working on personnel, but with McDaniels having the final say, Joe Ellis on the business side, CEO of the team, overseeing the business for Pat Bowlen. John Elway wants to be involved. We know that. Is Bowlen ready to give Elway that kind of authority, or will Brian Zanders be considered for this chief football guy position as well?
I mean, that's yet to be seen. It's a little bit early, and it's a little bit early to know who's going to be brought in as a coach as well. I know Leslie Frazier was the number two when McDaniels was hired, so it'll be interesting to see if his name's brought up.
All right, Alex, that certainly gives Les Frazier more than his share of leverage with the Minnesota Vikings and the Denver Broncos. Thank you very much for your work on that story. We're now going to ask Associate Editor Arthur Arkish to take over the microphone. And Arthur, you've got the Jacksonville Jaguars. You've got them in a familiar position, whether people realize it or not. A year ago, Jack Del Rio had them here at 7-5. They lost their last four. A couple years before that, they got to 8-5 and suddenly went down during the stretch. But you're thinking this year it could be a little bit different?
Well, that definitely could be the case. As you mentioned, they've been in this position before. The difference would be, obviously, last year they were chasing a wild card instead of potentially winning the AFC South, with the South being down this year. Of course, the Colts having all kinds of troubles. The Jaguars do have control of their own destiny and seem to have the easiest schedule down the stretch. Now, the running game is really popping. It's been one of the best in the league over the last 5 weeks, and they've got the right recipe for success now if they can just take care of business down the stretch.
And, Arthur, that recipe includes the run game. We all know about what Maurice Jones-Drew can do. Rashad Jennings has gotten into the party, I should say. He's been a very important number two at that position. What is offensive coordinator Dirk Cutter doing to prevent, you know, defenses from just stacking the box? It seems like they're still getting 8 and 9 in the box, and they're still having success running the ball. How has this thing worked so well?
They have been stacking the box, and it really hasn't made a difference. Maurice Jones-Drew has been on a run, 5 straight 100-yard rushing efforts, and Dirk Cutter has been just marvelous over that stretch. He's been stretching the field sideline to sideline to make sure that they can't put too much attention right in the middle, so Mojo can still do his work. And they're keeping the pressure off Garrard. They actually ran the ball a franchise record 53 times last week, and they're putting Garrard in a position where when he does have to throw, it's low-risk calls, and they're going to ride the horse basically down the stretch.
Well, and interestingly enough, Arthur, and I guess to the credit of Jack Del Rio, who appears to have saved his job, they're doing it with backup offensive tackles.
Well, that's correct. They lost Eben Britton, at least on the right side, earlier this season, and Jordan Black has stepped in. He struggled a little bit out of the gates, especially in pass protection, but he's been pretty good against the run, and they're really all coming together. Vince Manui, who tore his ACL in 08, has finally come back to being himself, and he's really leading the way for a line that's really doing a great job.
All right, Arthur, thank you very much. We'll check back with you next week. We now welcome in senior editor Mike Wilkening. And, Wilkie, the story in Baltimore, really interesting. I thought the Ravens had that game. It was a defensive struggle. It could have gone either way, but it just seemed to me it was the Ravens' night in Baltimore. Then the big play from Troy Polamalu at the end, the inability of Joe Flacco to make a play. And apparently head coach John Harbaugh got himself in a little bit of a stir after the game with some of his comments.
Well, John Harbaugh has a weekly radio show, and on that radio show this week, there were some callers that were a little bit critical of the Ravens. There was one in particular critical of Clarence Brooks, to which, you know, John Harbaugh took umbrage. He said he was proud of the team. And he later said, according to the Baltimore Sun, quote, "If that's not enough for you, then you can go find another team to cheer for. If you're not proud of this team, then you don't know football." So that was something that really caught people by surprise. Harbaugh later released a statement kind of clarifying his statement, saying that, you know, was upset about, you know, the caller criticizing Clarence Brooks specifically. But again, this is a loss that I think that sort of was tough to take for everybody in Baltimore, and there has been a little bit of an after effect with it, I would say.
Well, Wilkie, he's not the only one talking. I want to read a quote from Derek Mason, the wide receiver. He said, "I might get crucified for this one, but all these people we've got on offense, and we're not a good offense at times. Just call it like you see it." You know, what is the biggest problem right now? What is Mason talking about that you think it needs to be improved the most for them to be successful down the stretch?
I think the issue, Eric, is that this is an offense that's up and down. It's inconsistent. We remember when the Ravens didn't have the firepower on offense. I think at this point they've got it. It's just a matter of when is this offense going to be consistent, clicking, hitting on all cylinders. 173 yards in the first half versus a very good Pittsburgh defense last week. We're moving the ball up and down the field with the passing game, only 96 yards in the second half. And again, I think that game in, game out consistency, the run game has been a little inconsistent this year, hasn't been quite as good. The passing game, at times, you know, has been very good, and other times, you know, has sputtered a little bit. They're looking for the right formula that they haven't quite found it, but I think what everybody can say is, look, this is the most talented Ravens offense we've seen in some time, but the results in terms of consistency, we just haven't seen quite yet.
All right, Mike, thank you very much. And, of course, Joe Flacco, promising young quarterback, still looking for that signature win. We've got more Way We Hear It coming up in just a moment. Hub Arkus and Eric Edholm back with more Way We Hear It, along with the editorial staff of Pro Football Weekly. And we now welcome in Associate Editor Dan Parr. And, Dan, the story in Carolina, they're in line for that number one overall pick right now. They've got a quarterback they used the number two on last year, and Jimmy Clausen, who is not, he hasn't done much to keep them from having the number one overall pick. And now the speculation that Stanford's Andrew Luck, if he comes out, and he doesn't have to, but if he does, could be the first overall pick, and that could be where Carolina's focused. What did Mr. Clausen have to say about that?
Well, he says he's going to try to do everything in his power to keep the Panthers from having that first-round pick with a strong finish and a few more wins. It's possible that the Panthers could get out of that slot and drop to a lower pick where maybe that quarterback isn't available for them. So Clausen's playing for his job right now. There's no question that the speculation is that if the Carolina does land that first pick, they could look to get a new guy in there, and Jimmy Clausen could be a backup next year or maybe playing somewhere else, depending on what happens with the coaching staff and everything else. A lot to be decided here in the next few months for Carolina.
Dan, has Clausen gotten a fair shake with the supporting cast he's had to work with?
Well, he was asked about that, and he said it's for us in the media to judge. So I'll say, they hasn't exactly been helped. They have brought in a pretty young group of receivers. He still has Steve Smith. He still has a pretty good depth at running back. They did have some injuries there, but the guys who were asked to fill in did a pretty nice job. So, Maybe it wasn't an ideal situation for Jimmy Clausen, but certainly it was something he could work with, and he's still only thrown one touchdown pass heading into Week 14. Now, he's had injuries. He had a concussion earlier in this year. Things haven't gone well for him, but to kind of throw his guys under the bus and not come out and support him when he was given an opportunity to, I'm not sure how well that's going to sit with some of his teammates.
Well, Dan, it's that running back position I want to talk about. If there's been a positive, and that's stretching the word a little bit too much, if there's been a positive on this team, it's been the play of Mike Goodson. He was kind of ignored last season. Got an opportunity once, especially once D'Angelo Williams went down. Goodson's strong play, what has it done to the makeup of this running back position? Could we see a situation where D'Angelo Williams walks in free agency, the Panthers just let him go? Or could we see them possibly trade Jonathan Stewart, who's come back and had a nice game now against Seattle? How do you see that position laying out in 2011?
That's the decision they're going to have to make. I think one of those running backs is probably going to be gone. More likely Williams, just because his contract is going to be up, and Stewart's a little bit younger, a little less wear and tear. They do like that 1-2 punch. With Goodson being in there, they feel like they can match him with either one of those guys, and they'll be in good shape. So I think there will be a subtraction there from that grouping. And Goodson, he's dealing with a shoulder injury right now, but he really made it a big impact on that organization with what he did. They didn't expect him to be able to handle a full load, but he did do a pretty nice job as the featured back. They don't envision him in that role in the future, but they do know that this is a guy they can trust. And that could shake things up with one of the best tandems between Williams and Stewart that we've seen in a while.
Dan, thank you very much. Eric, I want to talk to you about one of your ball clubs, the Detroit Lions. An interesting press conference for Jim Schwartz, the head coach, after another loss this week. Talked about how good he feels about his ball club, that they're going to be good, that they're getting there. Said our record is not good enough, and we know that. We still have a lot of work to do, but we're not the crew on a ship that wants to turn back the first time we hit bad weather. That's not going to be us. Our record's not good enough. But to deny or ignore the situations, the things that have come up in the games, and not see that there's a difference there, is to have an agenda other than to be objective. When asked, well, what do you feel so good about? He said Matthew Stafford. That's risky, isn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely is. I think people are trying to decide whether there's a pattern between the two injuries that he suffered, the two major ones, and a third if you count the knee that he suffered against Chicago last year. Two shoulders. And the Lions will say, look, he never had a history at Georgia of injuries. He never had a history of injuries in high school. These are three separate fluky things. But the fact is, he's been off the field more than he's been on it his first 2 years, and that's a problem. So almost as much, So he's got to have a big third season. I think Schwartz is going to get another chance. There was some talk about him being fired. But, his optimism definitely raised eyebrows on Monday. And, look, I mean, it goes back to Rod Marinelli, how long this team's been losing for it. I mean, 19 straight division losses, 22 out of 26 games now, fifth straight this season. They've been close this year, but, they're not finishing these games off. They got to learn how to win games.
All right, Eric, let's quickly get to executive editor Dan Arkish. And, Dan, I know people have accused me of picking on Mike Singletary and the 49ers. I'm not. I can't write this stuff. I mean, it gets to the point. Now, suddenly this past week, and very mysteriously, his assistant head coach and secondary coach, Johnny Lynn, resigns for personal reasons. Do we know anything more about this, and can the situation in San Francisco get any more bizarre?
Well, for starters, no, we don't really know a lot. It's another one of these mysteries that has just kind of earmarked Singletary's regime here. I mean, going back to Glenn Coffey mysteriously all of a sudden just quitting, the running back, Kentwan Bomer suddenly leaving, Michael Lewis. It just goes on, and it just is like more evidence that Mike has just kind of been over his head in so many ways.
Dan, is it possible that intensity that he gets so much credit, so much respect for, is just too much, or at least that he is not ready to be a head coach and doesn't understand how to handle it around his players and coaches?
That could have a lot to do with it, Hub. What's really interesting, what I've been hearing lately, is just within the last couple of weeks, he's really made a conscious effort to kind of rein in his emotions and to, be under more control, to try and set a better example, because as we all know, he just has this tendency to just fly off the wall. So I think if he's going to go down, he's going to go down in a very professional and classy manner.
All right, Dan, thank you very much. We're going to take a quick commercial break here. When we get back, we'll go around the NFL. All the action. We'll preview every game. It's coming up in just a moment. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly, and an outstanding lineup of games this weekend. We'll cover them all for you, and we'll start with the Cleveland Browns visiting the Buffalo Bills. Cleveland Browns playing pretty good football these days, particularly behind their future Pro Bowl running back Peyton Hillis. Where this guy came from, nobody seems to know. Obviously, he came from Arkansas and then Denver, but when he became a stud is the question people around Cleveland are asking. Last week against Miami, only the second time this season he failed to score a touchdown. The defense covered him, though, with three big picks of Chad Henne. Now, Buffalo, now they had five turnovers in a loss to the Minnesota Vikings. They did get four interceptions from their own secondary, but it just wasn't enough, as the Minnesota Vikings were too much for them. Adrian Peterson had a field day, and you have to wonder, do they have the same in store with Peyton Hillis coming to town this week? Got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers visiting the Washington Redskins. The Bucs once again last week lost to a winning team in the Atlanta Falcons. They blew a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter. It has been their Achilles heel. But when the Bucs get in against the, well, the dregs of the NFL, which the Washington Redskins certainly qualify as, 1-4 in their last five games, they tend to do pretty well. Now, Eric, they do have to go on the road for this one, but I think the fact that Washington has had six turnovers and scored just 7 points last week, while the Bucs have forced at least one turnover in every game this year, tells you how this one might go. When the Bucs get a losing team, they play very good football.
Well, keeping it in the NFC South, I want to talk about the bookends of the NFC. At the top, the Atlanta Falcons. At the bottom, the Carolina Panthers. So this is the third straight road game for the Falcons. You know, I guess you could call it a road game. Tampa and Carolina, not too far for them to travel, but a good test for this young team. And I think they were pushed enough last week that they're not going to take the Panthers lightly. It's been 2 months, though, since Jimmy Clausen has thrown a touchdown pass. He really hasn't had a lot of help at the wide receiver position outside of Steve Smith. They're having trouble getting him the ball anyway. And I look for that Falcons offense to get a little bit more on track. You know, Matt Ryan had somewhat of a poor game last week, probably one of the worst of his season. Expect him to bounce back. And then let's head up to the Packers and Detroit game. And, you know, we talked about the Lions earlier and their struggles. It's going to be Drew Stanton again this week. You know, they got a little bit of help from the backfield. I mean, Javid Best finally broke out. It had been several months since he had really had a big game. Week two was the last time he'd had that kind of performance. So the fact that he performed well against the Bears gives them a shot. They've got Calvin Johnson. They may have the weapons. We don't know what Charles Woodson's health is like. You know, Green Bay, obviously the stronger team on paper. The way Jim Schwartz is talking, though, he likes his team. He thinks they've got a chance.
Eric, Cincinnati is going to go visit the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, the Bengals, they're not laying down. They've played fairly tough the last 2 weeks against very good New York Jets and New Orleans Saints teams, but they can't get over the hump. They've dropped nine straight. Now, they've won three of their last five trips to Heinz Field, but that's misleading because the Steelers are actually 16-6 against Cincinnati since 2000 when you include the playoffs. These guys met earlier this year with the Steelers winning, and Chad Ochocinco was held to just one catch for 15 yards. You do have Carson Palmer on pace to throw for 4,000 yards for the third time in his career. And when you look at this Pittsburgh defense, sixth overall, second in points allowed, number one versus the run, but they are 24th versus the pass. And so what the Bengals are going to try and do with Carson Palmer and, of course, Ochocinco and Terrell Owens, they could have some success. You have to wonder, do the Steelers have a little bit of a hangover? They played poorly the week before Baltimore, winning in overtime against Buffalo. They got lucky against Baltimore. Now they've got Cincinnati coming in. At some point, Derek, that kind of string does tend to catch up with you.
Yeah, well, we're heading up to the Northwest in another, the West Coast, I should say, in another divisional game. And, believe it or not, 6-6 Seattle, 4-8 San Francisco. It's a divisional game and one that has playoff implications. You know, we talked about San Francisco earlier. You know, for all their negatives, and they're going to switch to Alex Smith again back at quarterback this week. It looks like they're throwing darts a little bit. They've played well enough on defense at times, and especially in the run game. I want to see what Seattle can do. You know, Marshawn Lynch had the big game last week. Justin Forsett has chipped in. But the 49ers haven't allowed 100-yard rushes. That's one thing they've been good at this season that you have to talk about. So, you know, look, maybe Seattle can't go down and finish things off. That would really mix up this NFC West a little bit. And then two teams, boy, I don't know which is in worse shape right now. The Denver Broncos, having just fired their head coach, or the Arizona Cardinals. And they're not going to get rid of Ken Whisenhunt, but boy, he's been dealt a bad hand this year. Quarterback issues up and down. We'll see if Skelton is the guy at any point this season, whether he can show anything that's worth it. But again, the Broncos, their offense was shut down last week. Seems like a little bit of a rudderless team heading into Arizona.
Well, Eric, we will wrap up week 14 of the NFL season on Monday night with the Baltimore Ravens visiting the Houston Texans. And, you know, at this point, we talked already in the way we hear it about the difficult hangover the Ravens get from that really upsetting loss at home to Pittsburgh. And now they go to Houston, a team that has struggled. An interesting stat that Eric just gave me. Fourth straight year they've been sitting at 5-7. And yet, you know what, folks? They're still two games out of first with four to play in that AFC South where nobody seems to want to win it. And one thing Houston can do is they can throw the football. football. Now, Baltimore, defensively, we think of them as one of the great shutdown defenses in history, but the fact is they're 6th versus the run, 11th versus the pass this year, and they're not taking the ball away the way they have in prior years. So this one could get a little dicey for the Baltimore Ravens on the road. Bottom line is that they've struggled. 3-3 on the road this season. They've got to get back to what they do well. They are 19-2 when they run the ball for more than 125 yards with Cam Cameron as their offensive coordinator. It's time for the Ravens to get back to the run and see if they can't keep themselves in contention for that AFC North title. We'll take a quick break here, and then we're back with some of the key games this weekend in the NFL. Hub Arkish and Eric at home with you. Wayne Larrabee out on assignment this week, but Wayne will be back to drive the ship for us next week. We take a look at some of the key games around the NFL this weekend now. And, Eric, the Oakland Raiders are going to Jacksonville. Now, as Arthur told us in the way we hear it, Jacksonville at 7-5 in control of the AFC South. They do have to get a big win over Indianapolis, but nonetheless, they control their own destiny. Interestingly enough, we're going to talk in a minute about the Chargers and the Chiefs. If the Chargers knock off the Chiefs this Sunday, the Oakland Raiders could control their own destiny, because if they were to win out, they could get to 10-6. They've already beaten the Chiefs once. To win out, they'd have to beat the Chiefs on the last week of the season, and they could claim the AFC West.
This is the point of the season where every team looks back and says, I wish I could have won that game. They lost to Arizona on a game they should have won in a last-second field goal. But I think, Hub, the key, as we mentioned before, is stopping that Jacksonville running game. I mean, Maurice Jones-Drew, 667 yards his last five games. Rashard Jennings jumping in the party as well. Jacksonville outrushed Tennessee by 201 yards. That clearly can't happen. That 23rd ranked run defense of the Raiders has to step up, I think.
And of course, you've got that dreaded coast-to-coast trip for the Oakland Raiders. We all know how tough that is. Now, I just mentioned the San Diego Chargers hosting the Kansas City Chiefs. Biggest game of the year for both ball clubs, although the Chiefs do now have that two-game cushion over San Diego. Let's get a report on this one from Mike Costa.
The San Diego Chargers were victims of a physical beatdown last Sunday at Qualcomm Stadium at the hands of their AFC West rival Oakland Raiders. And with all hopes for the postseason riding on the contest, they know the Kansas City Chiefs are the most dangerous team they will face this year. Kansas City will most certainly take a page out of the Raiders' playbook and look to establish the run game, an area Oakland had a ton of success in last Sunday versus San Diego. Chargers head coach North Turner knows what he faces in the Chiefs.
We are playing a team that is very much by style like the Raiders. They're going to run the ball. They've got two outstanding running backs. They're very patient with the run, very good defensive front, and they've got two outstanding corners.
Quarterback Philip Rivers and his teammates realize they are running out of games in which to catch the Chiefs in the divisional race. He knows what today means.
We've had way less chances a couple years ago, if y'all remember, to get in, and we got in. But we got to go win this game, and we got to win the rest of them. But we certainly got to win this one. It's not going to be easy, and we'll be ready to go.
At 8-4, Chiefs head coach Todd Haley has the people in Missouri believing big time in his football team. Even with the success they have had this season, Haley still sees room for improvement with his young players.
Things that we stress and talk about a bunch, but that, you know, are a lot easier to talk about than to actually do in critical high-pressure situations and penalties at the wrong times. You know, again, we cannot have happen, especially here in this final quarter of the season, you know, when these games are just going to get bigger and bigger.
With a look at the Kansas City Chiefs and San Diego Chargers matchup in San Diego, I'm Mike Costa for Pro Football Weekly.
Well, Mike, thank you very much. And, of course, one other rather significant note, Chiefs starting quarterback Matt Cassel, an emergency appendectomy early this week. He will not be available for the Chiefs, and that certainly slants the playing field a little bit, although we all know the Chiefs love to run the ball. You know, Eric, bottom line here is that if the Chargers can win this game, they put all the pressure on the Chiefs. They'll still be chasing them by a game, but the Chargers finish with San Francisco at home, then at Cincinnati, at Denver, certainly all very winnable games. The Chiefs have to go to St. Louis. They didn't get Tennessee and Oakland at home, and we don't know when Matt Cassel is going to be 100% again.
Right, and the Chargers have to take advantage. They didn't last week. You know, they're paying for their sins early in the season. Another special teams mistake last week with the fumble on the punt, so they've got to play a clean game and win out. That's the bottom line with them.
One other game very quickly, the New York Giants now tied atop the NFC East again. They go to Minnesota, where the Vikings' playoff hopes are on life support, and the question in this game is Brett Favre's record game of 290, record streak, I should say, of 297 consecutive starts in jeopardy.
as the Giants come to town.
Yeah, I think he's going to play. I think I've said that about 38 times this year. You know, on the other side, you've also got Steve Smith, Akeem Nicks, both banged up. Those are keys for the Giants. The Giants like to pick on corners. Look for them to go after Asher Allen, who struggled all season long. If Favre can play, you know, we'll see. Maybe they can make some hay on offense. But again, it's always the Adrian Peterson show up there.
Well, and clearly the matchup here is the running games. Both teams very good against the run. What I think the Vikings have to dread is Tarvaris Jackson may be the quarterback of the future, but they don't want him dealing with that New York Giant pass rush this weekend. We take a quick commercial break, and then we've got more key games coming up for you in just a moment. Roll on with Pro Football Weekly and some of the key games around the NFL. And Eric, the Philadelphia Eagles are going to Dallas. This is a rivalry game of sorts, but right now, Eagles with bigger concerns. The Cowboys have been hot, 3-1 under Jason Garrett. Philadelphia now tied atop the NFC East with the New York Giants. They very much need a victory here.
Yeah, and I think the Eagles have been a little more conservative lately. And like you said, the Cowboys are playing with sort of a reckless abandon, but they're more focused. You know, Dez Bryant gone, that hurts them. I think that's going to take away a little power. But remember what the Cowboys did to the Eagles last season, demolished them the final 2 weeks, including the playoff game. I think the Eagles might come in a little scared, a little worried about their position facing a team that has nothing to lose.
You know, we've got the New York Jets hosting the Miami Dolphins, and folks, I don't remember the last time I saw a really good football team take a really thorough butt-whipping like the New York Jets did last Monday night from the New England Patriots. They're now a game back. They've got their rivalry game against the Miami Dolphins. Dolphins at 6-6. They got playoff hopes, but it would be difficult. They're in a must-win here. Let's hear what Bart Pastrna has to tell us about this one.
I'm not overly concerned with the fact that we've have a 1-3 record against, you know, outstanding teams.
Okay, Coach Ryan, but most Jet observers are. Coachosaurus Rex's team heads into a home matchup with division rival Miami, having just been embarrassed by the now conference-leading Patriots. It's not the first time this campaign that the gangrene offense was nowhere to be found. Add a dinged-up secondary to that sputtering O, and the beasts of East Rutherford have a little less bite in their bark. Still in good stead for an AFC playoff berth, still with a shot at the East Division crown. The Jets are still raising questions as to which side of the Meadowlands Mountain they're on, terra firma or the slippery slope. Quarterback Mark Sanchez.
In this league, you got to bounce back quick. You got to let wins go. You got to let losses go. And this team has an uncanny ability to bounce back from tough losses. So we're prepared for it. I know you just hate that feeling after a game like that, and you never want it to happen again. So guys will remember that, and they'll remember that in their preparation and while we're playing this Sunday.
To Sanchez's credit, the young QB has had some marvelous performances in his short career after Jet losses. But overall, he's working on two clunkers in a row, and he's going to have Miami's Cameron Wink coming at him full throttle. Lest we forget, the Fish are a desperate team in the purgatory portion of the playoff picture. Not quite in the mix yet, not quite ready to be decorating their NFL draft war room. They're also a desperate team that has proven it can win on the road, and to that end, they've been practicing at the Giants jersey facility in preparation for this game. And after a tough one versus Cleveland, there's more Miami motivation, says Coach Tony Sparano.
We lost two, so we're kind of ready to get back to winning too. So if there's a fallout factor for the Jets, there's one for us too. You know, our game was a big game for us. Their game was a big game for them. So we lost. We still have a taste in our mouth. They lost. They have a taste in their mouth.
And to the winner go the breath mints. For Pro Football Weekly, I'm Bart Pastrna.
And somebody's going to need him after this slobber knocker. They're going to get after it in New York. One other great game this weekend before we get to our headliner. You know, the St. Louis Rams may be the best story in the NFL this year. They're sitting at 6-6, tied for the lead in the NFC West, and with a real chance to get to the playoffs. They go to New Orleans this week. Nobody's talking about the Saints. At 9-3, they're in control of the first wildcard spot, still looking only a game behind the Atlanta Falcons in the NFC South. But guess what? After this one, the Saints go at Baltimore, at Atlanta, and finish with Tampa Bay at home. It's a big one for both these football teams, and Gus Gattengill has this report for us.
The 9-3 Saints have won 5 games in a row and could need to finish the season on a 9-game winning streak if they want that first round bye. They'll likely need to go at least 3-1 in the next four to secure a postseason berth. Right now, they're the fifth seed and would have to play the surprising St. Louis Rams, who at 6-6 lead the NFC West. The Rams have given the Saints fits as of late. Last visit to the Dome back in 2007, St. Louis was winless and left with a 37-29 win. Last season, a one-win Rams team made the Saints escape with a 28-23 win. Cornerback Jabari Greer knows it's a game that must be ready for.
It's a quality opponent we're playing. This is a good opponent we're playing. They've had some success within the last couple games. They're the first in their division. We have a good team coming in here, so we're going to rise to the occasion and make it happen.
Saints quarterback Drew Brees believes the play of Sam Bradford is a reason St. Louis is contending for a division crown.
Nowadays, it just seems like these guys are running these complex offenses in college, and they seem to be coming into the league so much more well-prepared. It's impressive to see them as rookies come in and be as successful as they've been, and Sam Bradford probably the most successful out of all of them at this point, and so you admire that.
Now, the Saints will get running back Pierre Thomas back this week. He last played September 26th thanks to an ankle injury.
I've been out for several weeks, and I do have a short amount of time to prove myself again, but I know I can and I will.
While the Black and Gold have won five straight, the last two wins came thanks to scores with a minute 55 to play and 33 seconds to play, as the defense has allowed teams to come back after large leads, something cornerback Tracy Porter knows must be addressed.
The offense, you know, capitalizing on our mistakes, whether we're out of position, we miss tackles, you know, we don't get out the field on third down, penalties, all those things come into effect, and we have to continue to work at those things and correct them.
The Saints offense, the last four games, have scored 34, 34, 30, and 34 points. The Rams defense is holding opponents below 20 points a game. Should be fun come 3:05 on Sunday. In New Orleans, Gus Kattengell for Pro Football Weekly.
Absolutely should be fun, and we've got another one that should be extremely entertaining. Our headliner is coming up next. The New England Patriots visit the Chicago Bears. We'll cover it in depth. It's time now for our headliner, that one game every week that jumps off the page at you. And this week we've got the team with the best record in the NFL, the New England Patriots at 10-2, visiting the team that would be the second seed in the NFC if everything stopped tomorrow. That would be the Chicago Bears leading the NFC North. Let's get this report on this one from Mike Petralia.
The two hottest teams in the NFL square off Sunday at an Arctic Soldier Field in Chicago as the 9-3 Bears play host to the 10-2 Patriots and their blazing hot quarterback, Tom Brady. Brady coming off back-to-back wins in which the Patriots scored 45 points each time, including Monday night's 45-3 mauling of their AFC East Division rival, the New York Jets. Still, Brady, who hasn't thrown an interception since Week 6 against Baltimore, thinks the Patriots have a long way to go before they can say they're playing their best football.
I don't think we sit here and think, well, we got it all figured out. We certainly don't. It's a whole different opponent, very different challenges, team we haven't played in a while, team we're not very familiar with. It has very good players. They play very well at home, so we're going to need to go out there and play really well.
Brady has 8 TD passes in his last two games to lead the Patriots to a one-game lead over the Jets in the AFC East. As for the Bears, they have won 5 in a row and lead the Green Bay Packers by a game in the NFC North, and defensive end Julius Peppers and his 7 sacks are a big reason why. He's coming on strong with 5 in his last 3 games.
It's not really too much to, you know, anything that I can say that hasn't been said about Tom Brady. You know, he's the best quarterback in the game right now. You know, he's playing at a high level. So we definitely got to do something to try to disrupt his rhythm and try to force him to make a couple of mistakes.
Brady says he'll have his eyes out for Peppers.
He's one of the best in the league. He's big, strong, fast.
The weather and field conditions certainly figure to be a factor at the new Soldier Field. As a new sod has been placed down for the game, snow is also in the forecast, but the bigger story will be the cold and wind chill, with temperatures in the teens for the late afternoon kickoff, and wind chills could be between 30 and 40 below. Mike Petralia, Pro Football Weekly.
Eric, interesting matchup situations in this game. You've got the New England Patriots, the one team in the NFL you probably don't want to play a lot of Tampa 2 or cover 2 on. That's the Bears' base defense. And then you turn it around. Patriots are susceptible on defense. Mike Martz's greatest show on turf would be a great way to attack these guys, but that's not what the Bears are doing right now.
Yeah, and they're doing the quick drops, the quick hitting passing attack. It's interesting to note the history between Belichick and Martz. Belichick typically has gotten the best of them. We'll see if Mike can keep with what they're doing for success. You know, I mean, it's going to be hard. They want to control the clock with Tom Brady playing as well as he is.
All right, Eric, it's time now for the Handicapper's Corner, and for that we welcome in our buddy Chuck Esposito, Race and Sportsbook Executive from the Phoenician in Las Vegas. And, Chuck, welcome to the program. And you know, I've been asking you about this all year long, but I see it again this week. These teams that just, they're the Rodney Dangerfields of the NFL. You've got St. Louis leading the NFC West, getting 9 points from the Saints. Kansas City, two-game lead on the Chargers. They're getting a touchdown. The Bears at home are getting a field goal from New England. Public just isn't buying these teams, are they?
They're not. They're, especially the Rams and the Chiefs right now, just not getting that respect. I think when you look at the Bears, they came off a big win a couple of weeks ago against the Eagles, but New England just looked like the it team last week against the Jets on prime time, and they're a field goal favorite in Chicago against the Bears. The Bears win this game, and they may have beaten the best team in the NFC and the best team in the AFC with 3 weeks to go in the season.
Okay, we go from possibly the best game in New England versus Chicago to possibly the worst one on the slate. And I'm intrigued by this game because I want to see how you handle it from a handicapper standpoint. You've got Denver and Arizona. One team just fired its head coach this week. The other one has had quarterback problems galore. How do you deal with a game like this? How do you look at it? And is there one team that you slant towards or another?
Well, I think when you look at these two teams, even though Denver has the coaching change on the field, they still have more talent. I know they haven't played that well, but you look at Orton and Lloyd and Marino, they have a lot of talent in the skill positions on offense. Arizona just has a number of question marks, lost a lot of free agents in the offseason. Their quarterback situation's unsettled. The game opened up around 5. It's gone up. So the betting public likes the Broncos in this spot, really has given up on Arizona, who over the last couple of years has been one of the best teams at home heading into 2010.
Hey, Chuck, one other quick question. When you see something like one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, Matt Castle, going down with an appendectomy midweek, now, as near as I can tell, that number hasn't really moved. Do you wait for the public to move the number, or what do you do about that?
Actually, in a game like that, Hub, we took the game off the board. The game is off the board right now, and we're going to wait to see if we get a definitive start for Matt or not. I mean, there's a huge drop-off after Castle, especially the way he's played the second half of the season. He got over 20 touchdown passes, only one INT. Him and Bo, that running game, he has really emerged as a young, talented quarterback in this league. We're going to wait to see for sure if he's in or out before we put that number back on the board.
All right, Chuck, thank you very much. We're going to check back with Chuck Esposito next week, as we do every week. And after this quick commercial break, we've got the Publisher's Pen for you.
And now with the Publisher's Pen, the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish.
Eric, thank you very much. And I know I'm going to start to sound like a broken record to a lot of our listeners because I keep getting back to, quote, the NFL efforts to protect its players by fining and eventually suspending players for making illegal or excessively violent hits. Okay, again, I support the effort to protect the players. But, guys, get some consistency. Get a plan. Give us some idea of what you're doing. And Ndamukong Suh was fined $15,000 for allegedly hitting Jay Cutler, Chicago Bears quarterback, in the back of the head when he didn't. It's just that simple. Now, a flag was thrown during the game, and I understand it. Ed Hockley was the official. It was quick. You couldn't tell. At first glance, it looked like he'd given him a chicken wing, like he'd given him a forearm to the back of the helmet. But as soon as you looked at the first replay, and the second, and the fifth, and the seventh, you could see that he didn't. He pushed the quarterback down. He pushed him hard. This is the NFL. That happens sometimes. But he did it with open hands, and he just pushed him below the helmet, in the back of the shoulders. And yet the league says, well, we're going to fine him anyway. I don't get it, folks. And at some point, there's going to be a real problem with all this because players don't get it either. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. Our thanks to the Packers and Falcons radio networks. Randy Meyer, our producer-engineer, Syndication Networks, such a great job every week. And most of all, our thanks to all of you for listening. Come back next week, same time, same station, for Pro Football Weekly.